This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and it has been a long week. We got into one of those little challenges this week, and it was very exciting. We have been working on bringing all of our websites up to one moment. How are you, buddy? Yes, they improved it. See ya. The co-worker was just leaving, and they had resurfaced. I had mentioned they had resurfaced last week. And for some reason, when they resurfaced the road that was right outside our house, they changed it from a two-lane road to a one-lane road. And so now we have traffic backed up. If you're wanting to come out of there and go right or go left, all of a sudden, where there wasn't that kind of traffic before, now it's backed up for two blocks. Not exactly an improvement, but, you know, I'm sure somebody thought this all out and thought it was a good idea. Anyway, so we wandered into something this week that required us to go back and do some rewriting on several different sites. And so first part of the week was basically spent trying to figure out exactly what we had to rewrite because it was fairly technical. And getting time estimates together on how long it was going to take to get everything fully compliant. And then the current project I was working on, I spent yesterday and today trying to bring it up to compliance and got through most of it. We still have a few little problems that I'm working through, but we're going to get there. It will be fine. As a follow-on from last week, in terms of attraction and marriage and all that sort of good thing, we had just a fascinating conversation that was part of a wonderful dinner that we had on Saturday night. One of my newer co-workers at the major client where I work, was having a little difficulty coming up to speed on all the concepts, and I've been there long enough that she had asked me a few questions and had explained that I could explain it to her in a way that it was easy for her to understand, and she was actually going to hire me to explain more things to her. And I said, "You aren't going to do that. I'm expensive. I gotta get my car worked on this Friday anyways. I will come see you." And so she said, okay. So I went ahead and came on in last Friday, and we sat and talked for a couple of hours, and she got a chance to ask the questions that she wanted to ask, and subsequently said, okay, now I'm gonna have you and your wife over to my house so that you can meet my hubby, and this is our way of saying thank you. So I said, okay, that's great. And especially great since she's Indian, from India. So she makes good Indian food, which my wife and I also enjoy. So that worked out wonderfully. But in the course of that, we went around and did the standard thing that you do when new couples are meeting each other, and that is, how did you meet, how long did you date, blah, 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 blah. And we got to there is a lady that is crossing the road, and she had a big grin on her face, and she was just strutting across the road like life was good, and it's always nice to see that. It makes me smile. And she looked very comfortable. So there was another lady at the post office today who was getting there about the time I was getting there, and she got out and she had her black skirt on, her black chiffon top on, and her Vans. I don't know how tall they were, 4-inch heels with 1-inch platforms, maybe 5-inch heels with 1-inch platforms on, and she was trying to walk in and, you know, walking. She had obviously walked in heels before, but, you know, you have to walk kind of slow. So I tried to smile at her because I tried to smile at everybody, and she looked down and looked away. She wasn't very happy. But that lady who just crossed the street that I saw, she was happy. That is always fun to see. Anyway, so we went around the table, getting back on topic. We ran around the table and talked about how we'd met each other. And they had a fascinating story. And it is a typically Asian story. And it sort of is an interesting commentary on attraction and how we pick our mates and all that sort of stuff. So I thought I would tell it to you. So the young lady had come over from India to attend college, and apparently Missouri State University here in town has an agreement, an arrangement with a college or university where she was from for students to come over and pursue higher education. This young lady was pursuing a master's in business administration. She was working on that, and she was within not too long of getting it finished. She was here in the States, and the Indians would have get-togethers where they'd make Indian food and enjoy each other's company. A lot of them, of course, would be Hindu. Well, a friend of a friend invited a young man to one of these parties. And he got introduced all the way around, and he said, when I met her, I found out her name was Shekinah. I don't usually use names, but it's important in this case. And he said, I figured when I heard that her name was Shekinah, that, oh, this gal is probably a Christian, because Hindus would not name their children Shekinah. So he kind of got a little bit interested, and he called a little bit. Hopefully I'm doing their story justice. I only heard it once. I hope I'm doing their story justice. There is a point to this. I called her a couple of times, and at one point she basically just shut him down. And she said, I should tell you that my dad is already looking around for, my parents are looking around for somebody to me to marry in India. And there's really not much point, because that's the way it's done in India. Oh, you parents look around, they find you, and say, ta-da. She said, you know, there's just no way I would even consider getting together with you to date or any of that kind of thing without my dad's blessing. So, as it turned out, her dad was coming to visit her, was doing some traveling. Her dad's a minister and was doing some traveling and some speaking and visiting different places. And so she had mentioned he will be in town, coming to town to see me in X number of days, X number of months, whatever it was. And if you'd like to talk to him, then fine. But there's no point in us pursuing anything until you talk to him. Okay, that's fine. So the young man was happy to wait. And so he waited. The dad came into town. Apparently, the mom had already kind of checked him out a little bit, kind of like what she saw, and the dad had already kind of checked him out a little bit, called his employer, talked to his employer a little bit, and so the dad got off the plane, and if I remember correctly, walked up, kind of slapped him on the door, the side of the arm, and said something about, so how are you, sonny boy? You know, it was very friendly, which they said, he's very friendly anyway, so, okay. So they got to know each other a little bit. You know, he talked to the dad. I'd like to start dating your daughter. And the dad was in town for, I think, 10 days, something like that. And he said, well, he said, I'm going to be leaving town. And the problem is there's really no one here to watch over this relationship. And it would not be looked on favorably for us just to leave our daughter here when she is courting a young man with no one to watch over her. So, if you're really interested in my daughter, it'd probably be better if you just go ahead and propose. I love this because this is so Asian. I just love this because that would be what's proper. We don't really talk about dating. We talk about getting engaged and getting married because the parents approve. And so the young man said, well, okay. He's never been on a date with this gal. And they go ahead and they get engaged. Ta-da! So then, and at first they were, you know, they had gotten engaged and now they're going to places and signing up for registries. And for the first time, they're actually finding out what their different tastes are like and decorating and those types of things. And they said the whole time they were registering, they were just fighting over everything. And they were like, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. But see, here's the difference in the Asian way. In the Asian way, you're committed. So you're just going to work it out. It's just not based on, oh, this person gives me such warm fuzzies in my heart. I'm attracted to them. You know, it's, we've said we're getting married. Our families have agreed on this. We're going to work this out. Okay, so. So his dad was traveling around. Her dad was traveling around. And he realized that if he went back to India after his visa was expired, he was going to have to wait 6 months before he could get another visa to come back to the States. So he was going to have to complete all his travels, which were going to be several months, then go back, wait 6 months before they come back. And everybody thought, oh, that's too long. So then he called up and he said, well, he said, I'm going to be going back to India in a month and a half, so it would really work out better if you all could just go ahead and get married. Because that's Asian. So, Shekinah, while she was finishing school, while she was by herself, was planning a wedding, and this is where her future husband's people really jumped in to help because they're all from this area. So she said it was just wonderful. They jumped in and got me places and helped. And they had a scaled down wedding from the perspective of an Indian wedding. But they put together a wedding in a month and a half and they got married and they've been married for 2 years now. And honestly, they just seem as happy as clams. And they're working it out as they go. I mean, it's, they have both come from really good families. And they're both good people. And they're working it out. It's interesting because Shekinah is from India, so she really likes big, bold colors. And her hubby is not, so he's more of the earth tone type person. But they're working it out. And I think in this country, just to finish up real quick with the attraction stuff, we put so much importance on attraction. And really, if you've got two people who are willing to work on it, you know, if you've got a couple of people who are dedicated to each other and will listen to each other and make allowance for each other's opinions and feelings and thoughts, pretty much any two people can get married and work it out. So since I had just talked about attraction last week, I thought, what a great story. I love that story. Anyways, I am working on a book, finished a book, called Blink, recommended to me by my son-in-law. It's a very interesting book, some interesting things to talk about there, but today, instead of sort of talking about the larger issues, since I knew I was going to be talking about the attraction stuff, and I knew that was going to chew up some time in this, I thought, well, I'll just pull out one of these anecdotal stories in Blink and maybe just chat about it a little bit because it is a hilarious story. I mean, it to me is just extraordinarily hilarious. because this is the flesh at work. And even after this story is all said and done, if you go back and you talk to the powers that be, they're going to come up with all sorts of explanations why, no, they did make the right decision, it was valid, yada, 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 yada. But, you know, when you're looking at it from the outside, you're going, yeah, no, I don't think so. Anyways, so of course, over in the Persian Gulf, we had Saddam Hussein in the 90s who invaded Kuwait, and the United States went over there and pushed him back. Okay. And, of course, we didn't actually defeat Saddam at that point. He was still kind of churning around over there. And the military, the United States military, was working on a whole new way to do war. And they wanted to prove out this concept, this new way of doing war, where they were just going to have tons and tons of information. Just so sophisticated with all our technology that they were finally going to lift the fog of war. I'm sure you've heard people talking about the fog of war. They were finally going to lift it. You know, they were going to have rapid, decisive operations and effect-based operations and operational net assessments. I mean, they just had all sorts of buzzwords about how great this was going to be and how much information they were going to have and how well they were going to be able to track the enemy. So they decided that they were going to put together something called Operation Millennium Challenge. And it was going to be this huge, huge war game. It was going to be the most expensive and the most elaborate that had ever been staged. They were going to spend $250 million on this war game. And there was going to be the Blue Force, which was the United States. And then there was going to be the Red Force, which was an unnamed rogue dictator in an unnamed country in the Middle East. And they were going to show how that, there was a guy pulled off to the side of the road, and another guy was coming, and I had to get over. That's what that big sound was. We call that driving by Braille. Not original with me, but a cute phrase, driving by Braille. Anyway, so there was this rogue dictator in the Middle East, supposedly on the red team. He was going to be outgunned, outmatched, outmaneuvered, out-technologized, and out-information gathered. And so they were just going to show how in this war game, with some real assets out there, and then a lot of it simulated, they were just going to take this guy out. No sweat, because their technology was so powerful. Okay. So they decide that the guy that they're going to get to be the rogue dictator is a guy they bring out of retirement. His name is Lieutenant General Paul Van Ripper, or Riper, Ripper? I don't know, it's R-I-P-E-R, Riper, maybe. They bring him out of retirement to lead the red team. Okay, so they stage this whole thing up, and mock simulation war game starts, and the first thing Blue Team does is they take out all his communication towers. Okay, fine. All the military communication towers. He has no military. And so then they're like, okay, what's he doing? What's he doing? And there's like no chatter. There ain't no chatter. None. Nothing. 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 And, you know, they've got a ship deployed in the Persian Gulf, and bunch of ships, and they're watching, and they're listening, nothing. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, all these little boats that are just kind of patrolling around, fishing boats and stuff, they all come rushing at these American ships, and these Scud missiles start coming at them, and these cruise missiles, and all these other musicians. By the time it's all said and done, he has sunk like 16 American ships, I think including the carrier, in the war simulation. And there's been like 20,000 fatalities on the American side. And he just pummels them. And they're all stunned. What happened? So they have this little quick debriefing, like, well, how did you coordinate your troops? How did you know what people were doing? And he said, well, you know, after the towers all got taken out, I figured that you were going to be trying to listen in on the cell phone communications, so that was pointless to use cell phone communications. So I just put couriers on bikes and just had them, you know, drive messages back and forth to the front. And they said, well, how'd you get all your planes launched without any chatter between the plane and the tower? And he said, well, you know, radio silence. And then he said, in the old days, in World War II, they used lights. People on the runway with lights. And so we just did that and launched our planes that way. I'm getting my mail. In other words, he just went quiet and he did exactly what they weren't expecting. And he was very successful at it, according to the war game. So now this is kind of an embarrassment because the Pentagon had spent $250 million on this exercise and they had all this technology. And so now what are they going to do? Well, the next thing they decide is a couple of days later, they decide, in essence, we want a do-over. So they refloat all the ships, they resurrect all their guys in the simulation, and then they have a do-over. Except this time, they come in and they start telling Van Riper, however you pronounce his name, I'm backing into my garage. They start telling him, well, you can't do this, you can't do that, you know, this you can't do. And they start supplying all these instructions such that there is really no way he can win this thing. And finally, he just walked out. He said, forget it, I'm not working like this. And he just walked out. Because the Army was pretty much determined that they wanted things to come out a certain way. And so they were going to fix it so that they did come out that way. We call this flesh. Flesh on a really giant scale. Flesh. Because they spent $250 million, and according to the lieutenant general who was the head of the red team, he doesn't feel like they learned anything. Or maybe they ignored the things that they could have learned. And a lot of Blink is about those assumptions that sort of lead you down the wrong way. And then also about that ability we have to make snap decisions when they're right. And trying to kind of figure out what the difference is and who should be making those types of situations. So I'll probably be talking about that more next week, but it was a fascinating story. And of course, it wasn't very much longer after that that we ended up invading Afghanistan and we ended up invading Iraq. And lo and behold, we are still mired in those countries because we had this great idea about what's going to happen when we go in there, and that's not what happened. Because we thought we knew. So anyways, the last thing I wanted to tell you all about today was a really wonderful experience that I had Monday night. Several months ago, I got a note from a young man who used to date my daughter. My daughter has only dated two people ever in her life. She married the second one. First one was a fine young man as well. But I'd always told my daughter, it's your decision, sweetie. I didn't necessarily arrange marriages for them. And the first man she dated, they knew it was going to be short term because my daughter was going off to college and yada, yada. But he's a fine young man. I had sort of kept in touch with him a little bit over the years. And I got a note from him on Facebook. And he said, hey, would you... He said, I'm actually going to start some schooling up in Springfield. I've been going to the seminary up there and be taking a class on Mondays. Would there be any possibility that we could get together for dinner? I said, yeah, absolutely. So we had our first dinner on Monday night, and we're going to get together every 2 weeks and just talk about God and things of God. But it really was just a delightful dinner, and it was really wonderful to hear the progression that God has taken him through and hear how God has worked in his life and has refined him. He and his wife have had to go through some difficult and challenging times, but they've grown through it and they've matured through it. And at the end of the dinner, I asked him, after we had talked and chatted and shared, I said, okay. I said, well, I need to know from you what you would like to gain from this. You know, what would you like to accomplish with us getting together? And he basically said, I've never had a mentor in my life. And all day long, I'm dealing with young men, young angry men, young immature men. And he said, I just really would like the opportunity to sit down with a mature man and talk with him. And I said, done and done. So we're going to get together every 2 weeks and just share our hearts. I mean, he already is putting into practice many, 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 many of the things that I have to share with him. And I heard that and saw it in him when we were talking. But I'm really looking forward to it. And I was just highly honored. He said that he had actually sort of been following my life recently and going out to the website, seeing he had already gotten a copy of Still Whispers. And I don't know if he's finished it yet, but at least he had a copy of it. And so to have someone examining your life when you're not really aware they are doing it, and then find enough compelling in your life that they come to you and say, I would really like to spend time with you. That is a high, high honor. And I really don't know what the tagline is after that. It's just a high, high honor. And I was very touched, and it was really a wonderful dinner. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.